Coming to you live from the Retroist Vault, Retro Radio Memories is on the air.
Welcome back, friends. I told you on the last episode we would be back before you knew it. Granted, one of the reasons happens to be the subject matter of this episode. For this Retro Radio Memories podcast, we will be listening to a classic episode of Suspense, featuring an adaptation of H.P. Lovecraft's The Dunwich Horror. We have certainly visited Suspense once or twice before on this show. It's easy to see why, too, I think. For one, they had a tendency to hire some exceptional talent, such as Orson Welles, Vincent Price, Alan Ladd, Lucille Ball, Gregory Peck, Judy Garland, Jimmy Stewart, and so many, many more. It was pretty understandable how they were able to secure so much talent, considering how popular Suspense was. In total, the show produced 945 episodes, and it is believed, by the way, that we are fortunate enough that 900 are still in existence. Now, H.P. Lovecraft is an author whose work has been celebrated just as much as his personal views on race have rightfully been condemned. His writings have inspired a score of authors like Alan Moore, Stephen King, Robert Bloch, to name a few. His stories have been adapted into numerous films, as well as inspiring some TV adaptations. In fact, on the Saturday Frights podcast, with my co-host, The Projectionist, we have covered a few of the films, like Reanimator and Dagon, for example. While H.P. Lovecraft most certainly helped to inspire later generations to make visual adaptations, his work surprisingly wasn't adapted for old-time radio shows, which I find peculiar, as more than a few of his tales would have been perfect for the format. Although not old-time radio, the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society produces the Dark Adventure Radio Theater, and they deliver an outstanding product. They have tackled stories such as The Call of Cthulhu, The Color Out of Space, The Haunter in the Dark, and of course, Herbert West, Reanimator.
Tales of intrigue, adventure, and the mysterious occult. This is Dark Adventure Radio Theater. Today's episode, H.P. Lovecraft's Herbert West, Reanimator.
Phineas, wake up! Something's going on in Dr. West's room.
Let me sleep, woman.
They're doing something in there.
None of our business.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph! What is that?
Oh, Phineas!
Stay here! I can cure death, Dr. Halsey. Will you really stand in the way of such a medical achievement?
Under no circumstances will I authorize the use of human specimens.
I will be sure to include a link to the Dark Adventures Radio Theater page on this episode's post on the Retroist. The Dark Adventure Radio Theater have produced a radio show version of The Dunwich Horror, although in the case of their work, it's not as abridged as the one Suspense delivered. That's not a knock on Suspense, of course. It's just that for the running time of the program, some things had to go. It works, though, thanks primarily to the star of the show, Ronald Coleman. I can only imagine the folks at home were rather terrified by what they were hearing back on November 1st of 1945. Coleman was a well-known actor of the day. In fact, he appeared in the title role of 1926's Beau Jest, just 3 years before the Dunwich Horror would first be published in the April issue of Weird Tales. Now then, friends, douse the lights, and let us go pay a visit to Dunwich, Massachusetts. Let's drop in on Wilbur Whately and his grandfather, Old Wizard Whately, as well as Professor Henry Armitage, by way of Suspense, and let us see if we can learn of the Dunwich Horror, here on the Retro Radio Memories Podcast.
William Spear. Come. Come in, Dunwich, Massachusetts. Come in, Dunwich.
Good evening. This is Henry Armitage. I'm speaking to you... Dr. Rice, please close the window. I'm speaking to you from my laboratory on the slopes of Sentinel Hill near Dunwich, Massachusetts. Present with me is Dr. Warren Rice, my distinguished colleague from Miskatonic University. We are now about 100 yards from the summit of the hill, which is crowned by a huge table-like stone set in the center of a circle of stone pillars, a place of prehistoric worship. A moment ago, you may have heard the dogs of Dunwich Township barking as we have heard them for 3 days and three nights. Dr. Rice and I know the horror which their barking portends, but the purpose of this broadcast is to make this unbelievable horror believable to you. I hope for your sakes and ours we are successful tonight. It is the eve of All Hallows. Tomorrow will be too late. Our time tonight is very short, so I'll speak only of those more recent events which, believe me, may culminate at any moment in a climax too frightful to wholly contemplate. I will begin with the birth of Wilbur Whately. It was the night of February the 2nd, 1921, Candlemas. Toward dawn, when Lavinia Whately, a deformed albino woman about 35 years old, gave birth to her dark, goatish-looking son in the crumbling Whately farmhouse northeast of the village. No one attended her. No doctor or midwife. No one was with her, except her aged, half-insane father, who was known as Wizard Whately. So Wilbur came into this world under heaven knows what incantations, what appeals to what power. A week later, Wizard Whately drove his sleigh into Dunwich Village and reported the event to a group of loungers in Osborne's general store.
Hey, your grandson got yellow hair like Lavinia Wizard?
No, pigs out to his father more. He's dark, dark.
You never spoke of who his father might be now, did you?
Oh, you know his father when the time comes. Oh, Lavinia's read and seen some things the most of you only talk about. Calculate her husband's as good as you can find this side of Aylesbury.
Well, we don't be nosy, would you?
Maybe it warn't in no church that none of you heard of. But you wouldn't ask no better church wedding than Lavinia's.
Well, I didn't hear tell of no wedding, wizard. When was that?
Oh, not a wedding you'd hear of, Corey. Not a husband you'd hear of, neither. But let me tell you something. Someday you folks will hear a child of Lavinia's calling its father's name on top of Sentinel Hill.
Prophecy? Or idle boasting by an insane old man? Oh, I know I ask a great deal when I ask you to believe that the arrival of an infant into that house of dire poverty and squalor could possibly constitute a horror and a threat to all our known world. Yet it has an earthly history. Perhaps through this history, you will be able to give it credence. Wilbur Whately's growth was uncanny. But even if he had been an average child, he would have become, in time, an unnatural being, for he was surrounded from the first by the most malign influences. There was his grandfather, old Whately, Wizard Whately, who each Halloween climbed Sentinel Hill to the great circle of stone, and while the hills shook, stood holding a great book open on his arms and shrieked into the wind. Shrieked.
Lord, Jumper! Lord, Jumper! Lord, Jumper!
Yog-Sothoth, that dreadful name, first mentioned in the hideous forbidden book, the Necronomicon. And this Wizard Whately was Wilbur's teacher. The villagers began to notice curious things that were going on at the Whateley farmhouse. Soon after Wilbur was born, old Whateley began to remodel the house. The abandoned upper story was restored, and all the windows were tightly boarded up. And then, Wizard began to buy cattle in large numbers, both horses and cows. Yet the livestock on the farm didn't seem to increase. Young Lem Brown was one day curious enough to creep close to the house to count the Whateley herd.
Dr. Armitage, there weren't more than 12 cows, and them thick. Looked like they had the blight and funny wounds on them, like cuts. I heard something, too, in the top part of Wizard's house. Something like water slapping inside, only big, big like a sea.
One other person went to the Whateley farm in the years before I met Wilbur, Dr. Ken Houghton of Aylesbury, who was called by Wilbur himself, who said that his grandfather was dying. Dr. Houghton found the old man in a bedroom on the ground floor and Wilbur with him, while outside the window, a legion of whippoorwills cried loudly and rhythmically, endlessly. Wilbur spoke about the sound.
Listen, they whistle in time with his breathing now. They're ready. Listen, doctor. They know his soul's going out. They're waiting.
Yes, Wilbur, that's an interesting superstition. Late in the year for them, too.
And when he goes, if they catch him, they'll keep laughing till break of day. If they don't catch him, they'll quiet down.
You mean you believe that... In just a minute. I think he's conscious.
Yes, the birds changed when his breathing changed. Like
Willie,
I say...
Willie!
I'm here.
More space, Willie. Remember, more space soon.
Yes, I'll build it.
You grows... But that grows faster. It'll be ready to serve you soon, Willie.
I know.
But remember, when it's time, you open up the gates to Yog-Sothoth with a long chant. The one on page 751 of the book. But mind you, feed it enough. Because if it gets out before you open to Yog-Sothoth, it's all over. It's no use.
He's going now. He's dead, Wilbur.
Listen. The birds. They didn't get him. Yes, he's free. He's gone.
Winter following Wizard Whateley's death that I first met Wilbur, he came in person to the library at Miskatonic University to consult a copy of the hideous Necronomicon, which was kept there in its Latin version, as printed in Spain in the 17th century. I tell you, when he came into my office, I was appalled at his appearance. 8 feet tall, shabby, dirty, bearded. But I was even more appalled by his voice when he spoke to me.
I wrote you a letter a month past, Doctor. I wanted a loan of the book.
Well, that's a book that's never loaned from this library. I doubt if it is from any library.
Well, I have to see it then.
Oh, very well. It's kept right here. As you know, there are only 3 copies of this book in existence. That's why we're careful. Here, you can look at it on this table.
Wizard said it would be on page 751.
What? What is it you're looking for?
The formula, the long chant, the one that opens the gate to Yog-Sothoth.
I I felt a wave of fright as tangible as a draft from the tomb. It seemed, somehow, like the spawn of another dimension, like something only partly of mankind, linked to black gulfs beyond all spheres of force and matter, space and time. And presently he raised his head and spoke again.
It's here, all right, but I'll have to have a copy.
Well, that paragraph there? I don't know.
Latin, Doctor?
Yes, certainly.
Then read it, Doctor. Let's hear how you make it out.
All right, that shouldn't be difficult. Let's see. Nor is it to be thought that man is the oldest or the last of Earth's masters. The old ones were, and the old ones shall be. Not in the spaces that we know, but between them. But only Yog-Sothoth knows the gate. Yog-Sothoth is the gate to where the old ones broke through of old. Their hands are at your throats, yet ye see them not.
Dr. Armitage, you see, I reckon I've got to take that book home. There's things in it I've got to try, and you can't hold me up.
No, I'm sorry.
I tell you, Doctor, I'll have the book sooner or later, no matter what. You see, it that's waiting for me at home won't wait much longer.
It was a week later that I was awakened suddenly by the fierce yelping of the great watchdog on the campus, followed by a sound from a wholly different throat, a scream. And I knew instantly that Wilbur had come back for the Necronomicon. I hastened into my clothes and rushed across to the library where a crowd had gathered before the smashed window of my office. Inside, there was a fearful groaning and growling, and some instinct warned me that what was taking place there was not for unfortified eyes to see. I brushed back the crowd, motioning only to Professor Rice to come in with me. When we opened the study door, Professor Rice screamed.
No, Dr. Armitage, no, I
come,
can't.
Come, close the door. We can't let them see. He's alive, but Lord, what a job that dog's done. Torn him to bits. Oh, that's a horrible sound, that moaning. Suppose we ought to call a doctor?
A doctor? A doctor for that? No doctor in the world would know what to do for that. Look, Armitage, it's not human, nor animal. Where did it come from? Can you tell me? Can you tell me what it is?
No, I couldn't tell what Wilbur Whately was. The thing that lay half bent on its side in a pool of greenish-yellow stickiness was 9 feet tall. And the dog had torn off all the clothing and some of the skin. It was partly human, beyond a doubt, with very man-like hands and head, but the torso and lower parts of the body were fabulous. Its chest had the leathery hide of a crocodile or alligator. But below the waistline, the skin was covered with coarse black fur. And from the abdomen, long greenish-gray tentacles. Now, the limbs terminated in ridgy-veined pads that were neither hooves nor claws. And as Dr. Rice and I stood staring at this presence, the whippoorwills began to cry in unison outside the study window. And then the thing on the floor roused and mumbled.
God. 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 God.
What did you, heaven's name?
Listen. The whippoorwills. prison. Yes, he's dead now. Look,
Rice. Look what's happening.
He's disintegrating.
Of course. Fast, too. Fading away. Because he isn't made of matter as we know it on Earth. I guess he took after his father. So there'll be nothing left.
His father? What was his father?
I daren't think. I thought then that what came into our world with Wilbur Whately left with him. I forgot what he himself had told me of it, which was waiting in the field house Wizard Whately had built, where the cattle were driven to disappear. But Wilbur Whately left a diary, written in a strange alphabet resembling Sanskrit, and I worked off and on for weeks to decipher it. And finally, I read the following passage written by Wilbur when he was no more than 8 years old.
That upstairs is more ahead of me than I had thought it would be. It is not like to have much earth brain. I can see it a little when I make the sign or blow the powder of Evangatze at it. And it is like them I see Halloween on the hill. I wonder how I shall look when the earth is cleared and there are no earth beings. Maybe like that upstairs looks, which has no body, even fed with all the blood.
Toward morning, in a cold sweat of terror, I called Dr. Rice to my house and told him we had to destroy what's in that farmhouse.
Why can't we just leave the thing locked up there? The house is boarded tight.
Yes, but do you think boards will hold it? Don't you realize, man, it hasn't been fed? It hasn't had blood since the 18th of September, when Wilbur Whately came here to die. We left for Dunwich that night, and we've been here on Sentinel Hill ever since, working desperately to discover the formula in time. But a week ago tonight, shortly after dawn... Yeah, hello?
Dr. Armitage, this is Lem Brown. I was just up beyond the glen, Doctor, looking for cows I lost last night.
Yes, Lem?
Well, Doctor, something's been there. It smells like thunder, and there's prints in the road. Great round prints, big as barrel heads, like an elephant has been along.
Anything else, Lem?
That's all I see. Except bushes and trees pushed back from the road like a house was drug along.
Oh. Did you hear anything?
Yes. Long toward morning, I heard a sound over toward Whately's place. A kind of ripping or tearing of wood like a big box was being opened up. Chancy, he heard it too.
Lem, who lives nearest the Whately farm?
Why, that'd be Elmer Fry's place.
Oh, he's on this line, too, isn't he? Hang on, and I'll ring him.
Yes, Dr. Armitage, this is Central.
I'm trying to get Elmer Fry, Central.
Doctor, he must be out somewheres, and his whole family. I was ringing there an hour ago. Earl Sawyer saw Elmer's cows stampeding in Cold Spring Glen.
Oh, you didn't get him, hmm? All right. But if you hear or see anything more, let me know. I'll be here working all day. Rice, wake up. It's loose. It's out of the house. One family gone already. We have to work. Pray God we find that formula in time. A week since it broke loose. A week of terror and panic here in Dunwich Township. Each night it moves about the countryside, leaving the trees crushed in a 30-foot swathe as though by a moving mountain, leaving its monstrous tracks and a trail of tarry stickiness, leaving crushed and gutted farmhouses and whole herds of cattle drained of blood. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the story to this moment. And tonight is Halloween. Tonight we are here to... Just one moment, please. Dr. Rice, did you hear something?
With the window closed, no.
Well, we'll throw it open. I thought so. Listen. The sound from a thousand bending trees. A sound like the sea moving across a forest. Yes. Yes, it's coming here, of course. All Hallows, it comes to Sentinel Hill. Dr. Rice, I'll try the formula and the powder from the altar stone. I want you to stay here at the microphone and report what you see.
Very well, Dr. Armitage.
Oh, wait a minute before I go. To any scientists who may be listening to me, if I fail, there is a possible alternative formula in Falconer's Mystical Formulae of the Middle Ages on page 24. Listen. Well, there are the whippoorwills. I'd better get out there. Take over, Dr. Rice.
Yes. I'll do as well as I can, Armitage. Good luck. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Armitage is climbing to the top of the hill, to the altar stone. I can see him plainly, for the moon is high and the night clear. Down the hill, toward the dark village, I can see the grasses and shrubbery bending down, marking the monster's ascent. It moves quite fast, and I feel a proximity to phases of being utterly forbidden. Now, Dr. Armitage stands now on the altar stone and is holding the powder which, if the books are correct, will make this thing for an instant visible. It is quite close to him now, perhaps 20 yards or less. He lifts his hands. He brings the powder in a wide arc. I can see... Oh, no! No!
Dr. Rice. Come in, Dunnage. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your suspense announcer. Due to condition... Oh, just a moment, please. One moment, please. Dr. Rice, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes, for a moment I was overcome when I saw... Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you can hear now the incantation of Dr. Armitage. Listen. Dr. Armitage is walking back here now. So we know that whatever it was, it is gone. It is dead. We can be thankful indeed. You see, I saw Dr. Armitage.
Yes. Did you see it, Dr. Rice?
I saw it, Lord, yes.
What did it look like to you?
It looked
here
like something made of squirming ropes, but bigger than a barn and shaped, well... like an egg, and dozens of legs, like barrels that half closed when it stepped, and nothing solid about it, and at least 15 or 20 mouths or trunks opening and closing, but what was it?
Oh, a kind of force that doesn't belong in our part of space. Did you notice the half face on top?
Half face, like a human face.
Yes, very large. But yes, quite human. And quite like Wilbur's, like all the Waitleys.
Then it was...
That's right. It was Wilbur's twin brother. And you saw what 3 weeks' growth had done. And it was the child of Lavinia's who called its father's name on Sentinel Hill, as Wizard Waitley prophesied. You heard it calling, Yog-Sotho. Ladies and gentlemen, this night is over. It is All Saints' Day. May heaven bless us all.
Dunwich Horror, with Ronald Coleman as your star of Suspense. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Friends, as smarter people than myself, and those numbers are legion, have pointed out, the Dunwich Horror is rather unique in the H.P. Lovecraft stories. As, in fact, Henry Armitage is actually able to beat back the evil that threatened the world. One of the changes from the source material, while Armitage is still triumphant, he was aided in the story by Professor Warren Rice, like in the Suspense episode. But in the original tale, they had a third participant, Professor Francis Morgan. The trio also were able to defeat Wilbur Whately's monstrous twin brother, although in the 1929 story, the description of it comes from a relative of the Whately's, named Curtis, who upon gaining consciousness again, has to say of it, oh my God, that half face on top of it, that face with the red eyes and crinkly albino hair, and no chin, like the Whately's. It was a octopus, centipede, spider kind of thing, but there was a half-shaped man's face on top of it, and it looked like Wizard Whately's, only it was yards and yards across. Now, that description to me is a little more horrific than what we got in the Suspense episode, but as you just heard, it's not been changed that much. I also loved the almost War of the Worlds aspect of this offering. Near the end, when Professor Rice looks upon the Dunwich Horror and faints, I think this episode is a prime example of why old-time radio is still so very enjoyable. And I think that about brings us to the end of this Retro Radio Memories episode. While I won't be returning next week, I promise that next month I will indeed be back with some more old-time radio goodness. The music you hear at the beginning of our podcast was provided by Peachy. If you have musical needs, you may contact him at peachy@retroist.com. If you'd like to contact me, you may do so at vicsage@retroist.com. You know, of course, that the show is available on iTunes, and it would be awesome if you could take a moment and give us a great rating and leave a comment. It helps us to find more fans of old-time radio. I want to thank The Retroist for being kind enough to host this podcast, as well as giving me a spot to write for nearly 8 years now. When you have a need for discovering and enjoying things retro, and we all do, hop on over to Retroist.com. Until next time, the Retro Radio Memories podcast is off the air. This has been a Retroist production. Thank you for listening, and have a better one. Goodbye.